I stood there with my palms sweating. And if that adjudicator had been an honest man, I'd have been sunk. But someone had been to work, I've no doubt, for he shook his head and snapped,
"I take the point of defendant's counsel. Lieutenant Comber, you will ignore that question. Mr. Clitheroe, I must ask you to confine yourself to the matter in hand. Proceed, sir."
"Very well, sir," says Clitheroe. "But I protest again, most emphatically. Mr. Comber, the Negroes who were carried from Roatan for Havana, were they chained, sir?"
"Most of the time not," says I, which was true.
"But chains were placed upon them when the American brig challenged the Balliol College?"
"Yes."
"Why were they chained, sir?"
"To prevent their possible escape, I imagine." He gave me an odd look.
"Was it not so that anchor chains could be rove through their shackles, so they could be brutally hurled into the deep and drowned?"
He looked at his papers.
"I quote from your own statement to the Navy Department."
Up came Anderson.
"May I point out that this statement, supposedly made by the witness, is not in itself evidence. We are concerned with what he says now, not what he said then."
I could feel the sweat starting out on my brow. How to balance the tightrope? "Talk for your life, Flash," thinks I. So I looked perplexed and said, addressing the adjudicator,
"Sir, I have reflected much on this matter. That the slaves were shackled and the anchor chain passed between those shackles is true. I myself released them. But in strict justice, I must add that the shackling was performed by the late Mr. Sullivan, mate of the Balliol College, and it was followed by a most violent altercation between Sullivan and Captain Spring."
Clitheroe's eyes narrowed, and I saw Bailey behind him sit up suddenly.
"Are you saying that Spring objected to this shackling?" Clitheroe demanded.
"I can't say, sir."
God, I was treading warily.
"What was the cause of their altercation, I do not know."
I took a deep breath.
"But I do know that Mr. Sullivan had served aboard slave ships in the past, and I don't believe he was quite right in the head, sir."
Clitheroe was staring at me in frank disbelief.
"But this is totally out of accord with your earlier statement, sir. What?" He scrabbled over a page. "Here we have you referring to Spring as an unhuman beast, a callous murderer, a—"
"This is infamous," roars Anderson. "I have protested already, sir." He swung on Clitheroe. "Is that statement that rubbish you hold in your hand?" And read out to vilify my client. "Is it signed, sir?"
"It is not signed, sir, but—"
"Then take it away, sir. Remove it. It is a scandal, a disgrace. I appeal to the adjudicator."
"We will hear the witness," says the adjudicator. "Not what you say he once said, Mr. Clitheroe. You must not lead the witness, sir, as you should know."
Someone had greased his palm right enough. Bailey was in a fury, and Clitheroe's face was ugly.
"Then I put the matter to you in different terms," says he. "Can you say that there were slaves being carried on board the Balliol College in contravention of American law, and that an attempt was made to dispose of them by casting them overside?"
I was ready enough for that.
"2 hours ago, sir, I would have been able positively to answer your question as to the slaves. However, you must see, in the light of what we have heard from the last two witnesses, that I cannot in conscience answer positively now. The distinction about American-born slaves is new to me, sir. I cannot say whether the others were also American or not."
He gave a snort of impatience.
"Was there not, on the Balliol College, an African woman? Brought from Africa, sir, and carried to Baltimore with the others by Captain Fairbrother, a woman named Lady Caroline Lamb, who had been carried from Dahomey as a slave.